Welcome to God, Sex, and You, a daily discipleship podcast on healthy sexuality. Here's your host, Purity Pastor Dustin Daniels.
My guest for this week is Jordan Lee Dooley. Jordan is an author, blogger, speaker, and the founder of SoulScripts Ministries, a thriving sisterhood of young women. At thesoulscripts.com, Jordan provides resources and shows young women how to study the Bible effectively. She also speaks at the nation's top universities. She's known for her passion and her love for God, as well as encouraging women everywhere to build community in the body of Christ. Jordan has just a few friends on Instagram, like 186,000 of them, and a few more friends on Facebook, another 196,000, and her blog has been viewed over 1 million times. Jordan, welcome to God, Sex, and You.
Thank you so much, Dustin. Such a joy to be here.
Well, you obviously have something to say, and a whole lot of people want to hear about that. What is it that these young women, what they want to hear from you?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. I have no idea. No. You know, I have been writing now for several years and just really zeroed in and honed in on what is really resonating with these girls and with this generation. And one thing that I really found is they were hungry for just really practical, honest conversation on both, you know, spirituality and also hard topics. I think a lot of the millennial generation and younger were seeking something beyond just Sunday school, typical, you know, Christian teaching. And while I always bring it back to the Word and my heart is always to be grounded in truth, I think they wanted something that was, how can I implement this truth right now? How does this affect me today? What's some action step that I can take in a really practical way with the things that I'm facing on an American college campus, right, or on the internet? There's all these new spheres of culture and types of communication that are happening at rapid speed, and things that people are being exposed to at such a younger age just as a result of that. And some of that is good and some of it is not so good.
Yeah.
But it creates this you know, deep need for connection because everything is so interconnected. And so really my heart with this and what I found that really resonates is this really practical approach to the Word and the calling on our life and what God says about certain things. How can we be straightforward and honest and truthful about that, but also practical and simple in how we implement it and how we take that and apply it to our lives and discuss topics? Like, I really think that they benefit so much from just having this very much girl talk kind of approach. Like, I love to write and speak in such a way that I'm just talking with a girlfriend on the couch, you know, and sharing, you know, here's a truth that is, you know, that I know God says, but here's the reality that I'm being faced with. How does that work? And here's where I struggle with it, you know, or here's where I don't understand. And actually working through those things and kind of sharing stories, swapping experiences, and then taking a look at what God says and how we can really come alongside one another. And I think that we all really crave that community. I mean, we all crave truth, and I always say everyone's craving the real Jesus. Everyone is craving truth. But so often we look for life in dead things, meaning we're looking for truth and satisfaction in things that just aren't delivering. And the more that we are in this culture that's so fast-paced and connected, the more places there are to try to look for that. And I think we're getting hungrier and hungrier for that truth, but we need it delivered in a very practical and applicable way.
How did all this start for you, Jordan? I was reading on your website, that you were called by God to build a house. And I love this story. Can you share it with us?
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of funny. I was in my sophomore year of college, and it was really kind of when my faith became so much more personal. I would say that's really the start of my tangible personal walk with Jesus. But before that shift really occurred in my heart, it was a cold fall afternoon or evening, and I had a night test, right? Worst thing any college kid could ever be faced with is like an 8 p.m. test on a rainy, cold October night, right?
Yeah.
So I begrudgingly sat, like, you know, very reluctantly go to take this test and felt very confident going into it. And turns out all the questions that were on the test were nothing of the material that I had studied. So
of course.
Me, the you know, Dean's List straight A student, was crushed, feeling like, oh no, I've lost the ability to graduate with 4.0, and, you know, when I leave, probably, I think I got like a 60% on that test. And so for me, that was so soul crushing because so much of my purpose and identity and worth was in my performance, you know, in the classroom. And just, I was so performance based my entire life, just how I operated. And so for me, that felt like this huge disappointment. And so I left that test and realized, you know, not only did I fail the test, but I also realized, oh, great, all the buses have stopped running. It's, you know, late at night, and it's raining, and it's cold. And so I ended up walking about 2 miles home in the dark, in the rain, in the cold, alone.
Oh, my gosh.
And that was that night, you know, where I'm, like, rock bottom, you know, had just recently gone through a breakup and had just failed a test. And it's just, I had friends that were moving away. I just felt like my whole life was just shattering, you know. And that's so dramatic now looking back at it. But in that moment, I felt like, what, you know, I remember walking home thinking, who on this campus would take a bullet for me? Meaning, who would be here for me regardless? Like, you know, who, I didn't even have someone to pick me up, right? So I remember feeling so isolated and purposeless and useless and just discouraged and feeling like, wow, my whole goal of accomplishing this, you know, high honor student might have just been tossed out the window. Now where's my worth, right? Now where's my purpose? I thought it was in this degree that I'm working so hard to obtain, which ironically I don't even use now, but that's another story. So, you know, so that was kind of the start of this whole process this night of feeling that way. And I remember finally getting back to my apartment across campus, being completely soaking wet, and walking in the door. My roommates looked at me and I just looked at them, and it was just like, you know, they just had this feeling of sorrow for me. Like, oh my gosh, you're, you know, soaking wet. So I go upstairs and I change, and I remember sitting on the bed that I had, and I remember saying, God, like, what do you want me to do with my life? You know, I felt like everything was falling apart. And I noticed in the back corner of the closet that I had the Bible that Mom had sent to school with me. It's my children's Bible, right, that I hadn't opened since sixth grade. And I was like, it was shining from the closet almost. Like, it caught my attention, and it was almost like I thought it was a magic eight ball. Like, if I shook it, it would tell me where to go, right? So I'm like, okay, I have no idea how to read this thing, but I'm weeping, and I'm crying, and I'm frustrated with life, and I'm saying, God, what do you want me to do with my life? And so I grab the Bible, I'm like, you're going to tell me in here. You know, this is how I'm, so I open it where my tear leaned it. So I held the pages facing me and the binding kind of like against the bed, and I held it in my lap. And then wherever my tear landed is really just where I opened to, which is probably not the best way to read the Bible, but I didn't know any better at the time. So that was kind of the start. And I opened to First Chronicles, the book of First Chronicles. Now at the time, I didn't even know First Chronicles was a book in the Bible. So I was like, what is this? You know, I was hoping for like Jeremiah 29:11.
Sure. Oh yeah.
So I open it up and another tear landed because I'm again like dramatically crying at this point. And it lands on a passage in 1 Chronicles 22 where David gives Solomon the command to build a house for the Lord. And my tear actually landed on the phrase build a house. It actually said build a temple, I believe. So I looked up what temple, and I remember thinking like, temple? We don't have temples anymore. What are
right.
we, what is this? You know?
Yeah.
So it led to this whole, you know, dialogue with God, and I'm saying, what does this mean? Why would you tell me to do this? You know? And it still struck me, and I read the passage in context, and I still didn't understand how a king telling his son to build a temple for the Lord and giving him the plans to do that had anything to do with what God called me to do in my life. But for some reason, it resonated with me, and so I just wrote, build a house, period, and stuck it on my bulletin board and thought, you know what, maybe someday it'll make sense. A couple days later, I called Habitat for Humanity because it was bothering me, and I figured, well, I need to build a house, and maybe that'll be my starting point, and I'll get some more clarity. So I called Habitat for Humanity, which is basically a nonprofit organization that builds homes for families that need them, okay? So I did that a lot with college students in my college town. So I said, you know, called them, and this woman answers the phone, sweet lady, and I'm like, hi, I have to build a house. Okay, well, it's you know, coming up on winter. We won't have another build until the spring. Do you want to call back in a few months? And I'm like, oh, no, you know. So I'm like, yeah, okay, fine. So I hang up, and At that point, I'm even more frustrated because I'm like, well, God, I tried. You know, I can't build a house. I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
So that was kind of where that initial thought got put in my head. But in the context of that story, and just he wrote that in my heart, and I had no idea what it meant. But then later on that year, I ended up going through sorority recruitment, which is basically like the process to join a Greek house on campus, which I never really had the intention of doing. A friend actually was a part of me signing up for that. And so I kind of felt obligated. And so I thought, okay, I'll just go through with this. Well, I ended up getting into a house, which is not really anything on my college agenda. I didn't plan on doing that. But at some point through that process, God showed me, you know, I felt like I was such a baby Christian, just starting to open my Bible again, you know, since I was a kid. I really didn't even know the first thing about being a follower of Jesus in a personal way. For myself and how I was supposed to live that out where I was. It's hard to do that on my college campus. But then he kind of highlighted to me, once I was in the sorority house, he said, look, like, I've built the house. You know, I don't want you to hammer and nail and do the physical building. I want you to build my house, which is my people. So build this from the inside out. Build the girls up inside. And so still didn't really understand exactly what that meant, but that was the first glimpse of that call. And then that just really translated into loving my sorority sisters, being just really committed to continuing to grow in my faith in spite of the dark culture that can sometimes surround Greek life on college campuses. And there were certainly challenges that I faced, but over the course of the next 3 years, I really got to see the impact you can have just by meeting people where they are, showing up, having those late night conversations, building them up, right? So it really, and then I really grew my walk with the Lord. And so that translated into kind of starting this blog and reaching other young college girls and millennial women and speaking life and encouragement into them and using the gift that I realized I had. And that was ultimately that I often was just asked for life advice, whether that was relationships or how to grow in their faith or friendships or anything that they're facing, and just speaking into that with truth and love. And so I just kind of translated what I was doing with my friends into a blog. And apparently almost 200,000 people agree that that isn't something they want.
That's amazing.
That's kind of how it all evolved.
You know, it's just so, it's so fun to think, you know, when you read scripture like that, like, oh, I literally have to build a house. And I've learned, Jordan, that it's just, I think God has the best sense of humor for him to reveal his individual will for our lives. No. I want you to build my house, pour into these women. That's such a great story. I love how you say that you believe that God is taking his daughters back. And I guess my question is, back from what? And then where, and then secondly, where is he leading his daughters to?
Yeah, see, we live in a broken world, right? So he's already given us the promise that should we put our trust in him, this is only our temporary home. So he is taking us back home at some point, in a very physical, tangible sense. But I also believe he's reclaiming us from, I believe this is just a generation of revival, even though it's, I feel like in the media and because of how connected we are, we're constantly hearing of the dark things and the bad things that are happening. And we're constantly, you know, being told about all that. And so it can feel like we're just living in this ever-present darkness, this hopeless situation. And I really believe that in building his house, regardless of how each one of us individually do that, right, and how we individually use our gifts and abilities to ultimately further his kingdom, I believe he's taking women back from the lies in the culture. I mean, it's really interesting to watch and just see the way that even in the most empowering, you know, women's movements, there's still this lack of satisfaction in so many ways. Like, there's always this power struggle that I think is ongoing. And I feel like that is a result of the lies we believe that the enemy has planted, whether that's you're not good enough or you're inferior or you're superior or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like God is using truth and using simple, everyday people and that are responding to the call to build his house, to reclaim his daughters from the lies of the culture, to bring back a spirit of hope and a spirit of overcoming. I feel like we live in this kind of culture that has a mentality of like victimhood, and everything is easy. Everyone's easily offended. You know, it's just kind of the culture we live in. And it's so many hot button things that it's difficult to just stand in truth because everything can be seen or perceived as offensive. Everyone seems to be a victim of something rather than understanding no, my identity is actually that I'm not a victim and that I'm a daughter, not a slave, you know, and standing in that truth can be so difficult in the midst of this culture. And so I believe that when I say he's taking his daughters back, I believe he's reclaiming us from the lie that we're a victim of something, or that we're, you know, in any way a victim of our circumstances, I guess, or the experiences we've had, and instead reclaiming that lie and restoring it with the truth that we aren't hopeless. You know, we are daughters, mm-hmm. and with identity. I think he's restoring this understanding of identity and being part of that and getting the firsthand, you know, witness that on college campuses and in places where those lies just seem to explode and take over. It's just such a privilege to watch that process unfold a little bit, you know, and get to be a little bit of a part of it. So
it's really encouraging for me to hear you say that, because from my perspective, and, you know, I'm much, much older than you, and it's just like, wow, you know, what's going on the college campuses? Mm-hmm. And, you know, mm-hmm. are these young people seeing the lies from the culture? Mm-hmm. Do they, you know, the struggle for identity and these gender issues and all these things, mm-hmm. do they really know who they are? That's so encouraging, Jordan, that you're building that house, I guess. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the word brokenness, and you say a lot on your video stuff that your brokenness is welcome at the Soul Scripts. Mm-hmm. And why mm-hmm. is that?
Well, one thing I found, especially being on a Big Ten secular campus, was this, I mean, and even I have this stereotype of, well, Christians are these uptight, religious, put together, perfect people. Mm-hmm. And then as I dug into the word more, I thought, well, that's not how Jesus was. Though. I mean, he was perfect, obviously. But what I mean is, he was the guy that was walking with the lepers, sitting with the prostitutes and the tax collectors. He was sitting on the outskirts. He was chilling with the broken, you know, and he was welcoming it. And the tagline on my blog and the whole invitation of your brokenness is welcome here isn't like a green pass to just set up camp in your brokenness. God doesn't say, okay, yeah, your brokenness is welcome here. Now just stay there, you know. But the heart behind that is, come as you are. Now don't live there, because there is hope. Because once you know your identity, once you've been welcomed as you are, right, you have this, you can find the restoration and the redemption and the joy that God can bring. He will reclaim our brokenness, restore and repurpose it, and use it for something greater. And so when we can walk and live in that hope and understanding, then we get to walk not as a victim, right? We get to walk in identity, live with purpose right where we are. And so my heart for that is really, you know, brokenness is such a broad word. It doesn't just mean the woman that's experienced deep tragedy. It can, but it can also certainly mean the woman whose life is completely put together on the outside. She has stellar church attendance, great grades. You know, I feel like that was kind of my story, is on the outside, I felt like I had everything going for me. I had the grades. I had a nice guy. You know, I had good, like, friends. I was part of a sorority. I had all these things, that on the outside looked so put together, but on the inside, I was battling an eating disorder, right? I was struggling with identity issues and just all these things that are a little bit not so obvious to the naked eye, but can be just as damaging on the inside. So I really think brokenness it affects all of us, because we live in a broken world. And so kind of pushing back against that stereotype of, well, your brokenness is not welcome here, and you need to look this way to come to our church, and you need to, you know, I want to push back against that lie and that culture, because that's what Jesus did. He came in and he broke down those barriers. He tore down those lies. He ridiculed or rebuked the Pharisees and the holy elite that thought they were better than everyone, right? And he basically, if I could sum up the way that he welcomed in the most broken, is, hey, your brokenness is welcome here. And then he told them truth. But a lot of times we like to say truth and expect people to just receive it before first welcoming and loving them and bringing them into the circle. And so I really try to, you know, just follow the example of what Jesus did. And he pushed back against that lie of, you know, this religious, righteous elite, and then was able to reach people with truth because he first made it clear that he cared most about their heart. And that's what I think we need to be doing more as Christians. So often, you know, people will agree that Jesus was great, but then they don't see that being played out in the church circles, right? It's also like institutionalized and structured, and it can feel very exclusive. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, I also have to always clarify that, you know, I think we also have this other extreme version of Jesus, which is, well, he loves you. It doesn't matter. You can do whatever you want. You're broken. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever, you know, like, God's cool. And, like, we almost have, like, a bit chippy Jesus that's just kind of there for you. Like, yeah, whatever. You know, and that's, like, a false representation, too. So, again,
yeah.
It's, yes, yeah. Your brokenness, all sin, all shame, all fear is welcome here, but don't live in it. There's more for you, right? I have a higher calling for you. So it's the welcoming first, the correcting second. But so often we just like to correct, and that's where that wrong stereotype that our world kind of in some ways rightly has of Christians have come from. So yeah, it's really just a hurt to push back against that.
Yeah, I love that. Come as you are, but don't mm-hmm. stay there. You don't have to live there. And I think a lot of us have lived there for way too long, and that's just the shame of not knowing who we are. So that's awesome. Let's talk about sexual brokenness. You're a recent newlywed. For the people listening who don't know you, you're 20 something young woman. You speak and you mentor to young women as well. And I'm curious mm-hmm. to get your perspective on things that the church really doesn't like to talk about. That's why this podcast exists. That's why my ministry exists. We talk about all the fun things that other pastors don't like to talk about, right? It's a very unusual ministry, but it's one of those things to where, especially in the college campuses, let's talk about the pandemic of pornography. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think to put it simply, I think all sexual brokenness, all boils down to an identity issue, because when we don't know who we are, we look for life in dead things, right? So we take things out of context, or a good desire gets twisted, because that is the brokenness that lives in the world. But a lot of it comes down to, you know, knowing our identity, and not only knowing it, but actually claiming it and living it. I think it's one thing to talk about it, and it's another mm-hmm. thing to stand in it. And so, you know, one thing I've observed a lot too, when it comes to the pornography kind of pandemic of things, especially now, because kids have had access and been exposed to things at such a younger age, so often it's just assumed that men are the only ones that struggle with pornography, and it's like weird for women to struggle with that. But how common it is I've heard story after story after story from so many girls on campuses that are just living in shame and living this secret life of hiding, because they have been struggling with that since they were 14, because they, you know, saw something on a smartphone or a laptop or something. And when that happens at such a young age, it actually can, like, I don't even know the science behind it, but I know it can affect how the brain is developing. And so really, I honestly feel like anyone, I mean, there's women of all ages that struggle with it, but I feel like it's almost becoming more and more common in the girls that are, you know, currently in college and younger, because they've had access to that technology even more. So they've been exposed at a younger age, which naturally and very biologically, I guess, can warp distort or affect the brain, and it can become like almost an addiction at such a young age. And so I've seen that more and more, and I don't think it's ever not been something that women struggle with. I just see it becoming more and more common, but we're still kind of living in this assumption that it's basically a man thing. But I think there are so many women that have struggled with the shame of that and don't really feel like they have a safe place to speak out about it. And if they do, then they're shamed or they're looked at or they're considered, you know, overly sexual beings and something is wrong with them. And it's like, sometimes we just have to be honest and say, hey, women have sex drives too. You know, like,
sure.
Women are interested in things too. And let's be honest and straight up about that, so that we can then spearhead the problem and begin to not just, you know, correct behavior or, you know, remove that, but actually help cultivate a heart change and a freedom that comes with the confession of that and bringing that to the light and talking about it versus tucking it away and living in this shame, in this secret place that even God can't, like, they don't even let God into, right? Where's the freedom in that? Where's mm-hmm. how can you stand in your identity when 50% of you is hiding in the closet? You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's such a serious issue that I think has been affecting views on how like being loved, on lovability, on worse, on purpose, you know, how can you live in your purpose when there's this big secret holding you back? So I think that is such a serious thing that needs to be addressed so much more. And we need to have more safe places to talk about that, because like it says in scripture, confess your sins to one another so that you may be healed, not so that you may be embarrassed, not so that you may be shamed, not so that you may be put away, literally for the sake of bringing healing. But how is that? How do you bring that healing if there's not really that place to confess it or talk about it?
Have you had conversations with people to go, you know what, Jordan, I think you just need to maybe lighten up on this pornography thing. You know, it's not really hurting anybody. You know, it's not really a sin either. You know, have you had those conversations with people?
A little bit. I definitely have girls that struggle with it. And for some reason, they have this weird, like, they still feel like it's a secret. So one thing I found is they're like, well, I struggle with this, and I don't really feel comfortable talking to anyone about it. But I don't know if it's, I don't think it's really wrong. And so that kind of is, to me, I say, you know, it's like, well, if you feel a shame associated with it, then there's something that's not sitting right with you in your heart, right? If it was full of light and goodness and truth and joy, there'd be no shame in talking about it, right? You talk about it just like you went to the park, right? It would be a big secret thing. And so clearly there's some sort of damage that's coming from it, even if you can't put your finger on it, or even if you don't quite understand it. And so it's basically, you know, I have faced that in some ways, and that's a difficult subject because we all have a different sometimes understanding of certain subjects and issues. But at the same time, if we can take the if we can look at it objectively and consider why does it need to be done in secret, then why are you not just doing it at the library, you know what I mean, with things
right.
like that, then it kind of yeah. reveals that there is some sort of shame associated with mm-hmm. it. And that's kind of how I can walk into that conversation without being condemning or without, you know, pointing a finger and saying you're wrong, you know, but actually just kind of diving into it a little bit more and observing, well, then why do we feel any kind of secret or shame or any of that associated with it, you know? And sex is somewhat of a private, personal thing, but if it's life-giving and joyful, then there should be no shame or fear in talking about it. I think that kind of starts to reveal there's something in us innately that knows there has to be something. This wasn't the design. God never designed it to be, you know, something that we thrive from, right? It might be something that our desires push us towards or might enjoy temporarily, but it's not something that will bring us the ability to thrive long term.
When you are speaking at your conferences and emails or just the subject matter, I'm curious, are these women, are they asking you about the topic of sexuality? Is there something that pops out as a theme, or is that not something that's really addressed in your writings and inside your ministry?
I wouldn't say on college campuses, just because we're usually in a crowd of hundreds of girls. And so I don't really notice a whole lot of people speak up, in a public sense about that, or when we're in a crowd. I will have many women, during my meet and greet or via email, basically kind of come up and ask, hey, what should I do? Because I'm really struggling with this. Or, you know, in my heart, I want to wait till marriage, but my boyfriend and I just keep struggling, or I feel a lot of shame, or I struggle with pornography, or whatever it might be. I have that question probably one or two times a week, in addition to many other questions that we get. But I feel like that is something that is recurring and it's just not talked about. And so, yeah, I wouldn't say when I'm on the campuses so much, just because, you know, I'm speaking on a platform to a large group, and then we do a very quick meet and greet, so there's not a lot of time for it.
Sure.
But when there is a kind of a private encounter or an email or something like that, we do find that being very much a recurring question, issue, struggle, pain point. I mean, it's different for every girl, but it seems to be something people want to talk about and learn more about. It's just a hard subject to address.
Let's chat about the I don't know, your thoughts on the recent, all the sexual harassment scandals and in Hollywood and the politicians. What do you think God is doing with all that? Kind of opening up the, you know, the dam has bust here on all these allegations. What are your thoughts on all that?
Man, I feel like it's horrible and sad and wrong as it is in so many ways. I also think, you know, from every horrible thing, you know, now it's like things are being brought to the light, and it just shows and reveals how broken our world can be and the darkness in the human heart, right? And the reality that even these people that we often would look up to, right? Sometimes we're so crushed when it's a public figure or someone that we followed or respected, and then we hear about this horrible thing that they've done or way that they've allowed their desires to drive their decisions, even if those aren't, you know, good and right desires. And that can cause horrible things to happen to victims and people that are undeserving of that. You know, I think it just reveals so much about who are we really putting our trust in, you know? so it's kind of a, I feel like it's a reality check. I mean, as horrible as it is outside of that, I think for just us as a nation and people, I feel like we put public figures or writers or speakers or movie stars or athletes or politicians on these platforms because they've accomplished something or because they have a public name or a following or whatever. And we almost have this like no fail expectation of them. And then when one of these things happen, it's almost like, oh, wow. You know, and it's so discouraging because we almost make like little false gods out of people, and we put so much hope in a politician's decision or these people we make our idols, right? And it just reveals like there is no hope in that because these people are broken and sinful, and they will let us down, whether the, I mean, in whatever way, and sometimes in these horrible ways. And it just was almost like, I think in some ways through it, it's almost challenging us to consider where are we seeking real love? Where are we seeking, what are we looking to and who are we looking to with our trust? Where are we putting our dependency? Because obviously all these people are failing us in many ways and letting us down and doing these horrible things. Well, that's because they're just as broken and sinful as we are. And so I think it's bringing light to the situation. It's making it clear that there is a deep issue in not only the human heart, but just in society in general. And I think it's also challenging us to consider where and who we are looking to for purpose, for to put our trust in all of that. So in some ways, I think indirectly, it can be kind of God's call back to himself saying, like, look, all these almost false gods that you worship or that you, you know, beyond admire but put so much hope and trust in, they're going to fail you, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
So I think it's almost a challenge.
Has this opened up the conversation, Jordan, for sexual harassment or just maybe, you know, that's a big word, right? Sexual harassment, but just, you know, the looks or the feelings or of just being, you know, being out on a date with somebody and just knowing something's not right. You know, we, you know, women's intuition. And then if you're a Christian, you've also got the Holy Spirit, you know, so something you can tell something's not right. Has this scandal in Hollywood and all this, has it opened up a kind of an honest and conversation between young women?
I think so. I think actually in many ways there's a more of awareness. I think before there was this shame of ever opening up about things that maybe you've experienced or been a victim of or whatever. And so I think in some ways, it, as sad as it is, it's also kind of, like you said, it's creating this doorway to, oh my gosh, wait, I experienced that, but I felt shame and thought it was my fault, so I never talked about it, and then I've been harboring it all these years, you know, or all these months, or I think it also, in some ways, is bringing awareness to people who may not otherwise have been aware that that could be a sign of, you know, sexual harassment or a part of sexual harassment, and just thought, oh, this is normal, when in reality it's not. And so, especially, you know, I think it's bringing freedom and kind of a liberation from the shame that maybe some have been carrying for so long to finally be able to talk about it, because it's more of a discussion that can happen now, praise God. But I also think it's bringing an awareness to people who are just beginning to date, you know, young women that are beginning to date, or just people who maybe didn't really understand what that really looks like or signs of that, allowing them to be a little bit more aware and more willing and able to speak out against it or seek guidance on it or like seek the help that's necessary if that's something they've experienced. So in some ways, you know, there is good coming from it on a broad scale, and bringing it more of an awareness and discussion to the topic that for so long I think just got shut behind closed doors, which therefore allowed it to kind of happen in secret so much more.
And I think it's really, really important that the women that you speak to understand that in no way is a man to talk to you, treat you any way that you feel uncomfortable, for you to call that stuff off immediately, because if you don't, it just gets worse.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, my ministry is one of recovery. So, you know, I get to see the fallout, and, you know, my life is a testimony of that stuff too. And I just want to encourage the people that follow you, that, man, this is, if you sense something is not right here, it doesn't go away. It only gets worse. I read a story, and I think this is so cool, that you wrote a letter to your future husband before you, and correct me if I'm wrong, but before you actually met him. Is that right?
Yes, I actually wrote him several letters. I started when I was 13.
Wow. Well, share that story with us. Why did you start writing these letters at 13?
Well, I started writing them almost because I've always been a writer at heart, right? So I didn't really even realize that was what I just naturally would do. But I heard when I was I think I was in eighth grade or a freshman in high school, something like that. My dad, he gave me a purity ring. And I know that's like so cliche, but he did. And I think my mom may have talked him into giving it to me, but either way, it was given to me. And I was really touched by that. And I really wanted to honor my earthly father in that promise before I even really was ever, you know, very personally walking with God. I just knew that was something that my dad, you know, gave me this. And I want to honor it as well as I can. So that was kind of the start of my heart for, you know, hoping and trying to wait till marriage. And so then, just over the course of my life, had many different experiences, and I dated a couple guys in high school, you know, not incredibly seriously, but I, you know, had dated a little bit. So when I was 13 and he gave me that ring, a few months later, there happened to be someone came and spoke on their experience with sex and dating and all of that to our school. And I feel like at the time, I kind of rolled my eyes, but it still kind of impacted me. And he told a little bit of his story. And how his wife had written him a letter before they got married or something. And he didn't go, I don't even remember all the details. I just remember loving that idea to write your husband a letter, just whatever you might be praying for him, or I don't know. I just know she wrote him a letter. And so I was touched by that. So what I started to do is I wrote a letter to my future husband when I was 13 or 14, right around that age. And it was just kind of like my promise to try to honor this commitment that I've made and wait for him and give myself fully to him as much as I possibly could. You know, and at 13 or 14, I was like, no problem. I'm going to be this boy. but then as life went on, it got more and more difficult and I was faced with more, you know, just challenging situations. Sure. And temptations and things like that. And so then I just continued, you know, I remember at one point a couple of years later, I was dating someone and was in a situation where I had to make a decision of how it was going to go. And I ended up walking out of that situation. And I remember, like, I think the relationship ended after that because that's awkward. And I basically said no and felt almost liberating in some ways, but also kind of sad because I thought, did I just lose a nice guy? You know, was mm-hmm. he the one? You know, I'm 16 thinking this, but I was still so frustrated and unsure of, like, did I make the right decision? Is this worth it? And that was when I remembered that I had written that letter. And so I decided to write another one. And I thought, you know what, I don't know what else to do. So I'm just going to, it was almost like a tangible tool for me. Every time that I faced something that was discouraging or I struggled with it, or I felt like, is this worth it? I would write to my future husband. Also, as I got older, I understood that, okay, maybe I won't get married at some point. So I ultimately looked at it like writing to the Lord as my ultimate, you know, I'm the bride of Christ. And so the more I grew in my faith, the more I understood that. And so the more I was able to write my letters to kind of ultimately encompass that. But I wrote 5 or 6 or 7 or something over the course of 10 years before I married Matt, and just kept them in a box. And every time that it was really a struggle for me or really something that I was starting to be frustrated with or whatever, I would use that as something to keep me going and knowing that I was working towards something greater than myself, whether that was just honoring God in general or giving myself to my future husband and having that as a gift as well, you know? So I just kind of did that throughout my high school and college years. And even when I was dating and engaged to my husband, my now husband, when we were dating, I remember I wrote one to my future husband because at the time, even though I was fairly certain he would be the one, we weren't engaged yet, you know? So I didn't write anything specifically to him. And then the day we got engaged, I wrote one that said, I met you today. And kind of talked about, like, I now know who you are. I look forward to marrying you. These next several months of wow. waiting will be even more difficult, but I look forward to, you know, giving you this letter. And so then on our wedding day, he got a box with all of those letters that had added up from age, you know, for the last decade, honestly. And then he also received the letter that I wrote that said, you know, dear future husband, this is the last time I'll call you for my future husband because now you're going to become my forever husband. And so on the morning of our wedding day, he got to read all of those in chronological order. On the top was the one that I wrote at age 13, and then on the bottom was the one that I wrote the day before our wedding day. So it was really kind of like it all was just so, it reminded me, like, wow, operating in God's design and living with a, with an eternal perspective, right? Instead of in the right here, let me satisfy this desire right now, or make this boy happy right now, or feel good in this moment, but then shame in the next, you know, or whatever. It just, it made the patience so worth it. And it made me realize, like, wow, this design is so beautiful.
That is so cool, Jordan. It really, really is. Now, were you there when he read those letters?
No, they have it on video. So he didn't know it was happening. So I actually, the night of our rehearsal dinner, his brother was the best man. So I gave him the box. And then the next morning, after Matt had gotten ready for the wedding and before he came to the church, his best man gave him the box. And so my videographer was on board. He knew. So they got it on video, and I got to see his reaction, which was amazing. And it was like one of the most just humbling things to just get to experience and be a part of, and such a gift. So I wish I would have kind of seen it, but I got a little bit of a glimpse.
That's amazing. You know, so it's like, as a guy, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, I cannot mess this up. If I screw this up, you know, she's been planning this since 13 years old. That's just a great story. Thank you for sharing that, Jordan.
Absolutely.
I laughed out loud yesterday. I was on your site prepping for this show, and you mentioned on your website, it might have been Instagram or something, to where you and Matt did the love dare test, marriage test.
Yes.
And I laughed out loud because you said that you didn't do good, or you failed at it, or something like that. Can you share your thoughts on that as being married for almost 2 years now?
Yeah. Well, so we are still in the process of actually going through the rest of the book, but we did the day one initial evaluation. And what it is it's a self-evaluation. So you're supposed to basically answer the questions based off of how you think you're doing. And every now and then it'll be a question like, I think from what I can tell, my spouse is satisfied with the affection that I show, or the way I listen, or whatever this question might be. So basically, I have to answer it for myself, and I am very self-critical. So I, you know, basically like disagree, he's unsatisfied. You know, I'm ranking myself a one. I'm horrible at that. You know,
right?
I was trying to be really honest. So it's so funny because Matt at the same time was doing his evaluation. And so we finish, and it scores out of 1,000, I believe. So you get out of the questions that you answer, each answer is worth so many points, and depending on how you rank yourself, you know, you're given a score. So my score was like 400. That was like 800 or 700 or something, and I'm like, well, it's obvious who the worst spouse is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he looks at me, and he's like, he starts laughing. He's like, let me look at your answers. And he goes, Jay, I don't think that. And you know this well. You know, why were you so hard on yourself? And I was like, well, I don't know. I didn't want to lie, you know? So then we ended up switching, and he took the test, like, from his perspective for me. So answering, like, basically the truth of what he really sees in me as a spouse, and vice versa. And actually, it turned out that our scores were a little bit more, they're both in like the 600 range. So it was just interesting because sometimes I realized, like, wow, sometimes we can be so critical of ourselves, and that's not really the truth of who we are or what we're mm-hmm. like. So that was quite eye-opening for me as a spouse. It also was very humbling. I did realize, well, maybe he's just being nice. You know, maybe I do need to listen more, you know, whatever. So yeah, as a somewhat newlywed, kind of getting into that normal marriage stage, it was eye-opening. It was certainly eye-opening and a good exercise for us to do.
That's so funny. It reminded me of when Amy and I, man, this was like 12 or 13 years ago, we went to a conference called Love and Respect.
Oh, yeah.
With Dr. Emerson. And he gave us some kind of test, you know. And so we filled this stuff out and we're in the pews. And so I turned my sheet over so Amy can't see it. And we were supposed to pass him to the center. Well, Jordan, she picks my piece of paper up and she looks at it before she passes it to the next person. And she looks at me and her mouth just dropped. And she's like, you gave me a four on this, you know, whatever it was. And she was devastated. But the one thing that it did is that it opened up a new line of communication for us. So we could talk about, you know, what that stuff was. So,
absolutely.
So it was real fun. Those tests and those quizzes and paperwork and all that kind of stuff when it comes to marriage is, it's not the funnest thing in the world. But if you're going through that right now, I would really encourage you to pursue that, especially if you're going to counseling or anything like that. Keep digging. God works all these details out. You know, we've all made, when it comes to sexuality, Jordan, we've all made mistakes. It doesn't really matter if you've grown up into, you know, the perfect Christian family. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering, in our last few minutes here, for those listening to the podcast, a lot of people listen because they've made mistakes. And they don't know what to do. They're stuck. Just like you said earlier, they're stuck. They don't know how to move forward. Can you share some encouraging words first to the women who are stuck, and then to the men?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing I would say to women, and I think this applies to men too, but when it comes to sexual shame, and even the Bible tells us, like, it is a sin that feels, I mean, it's against ourselves, right? It's against our own bodies. And so it can feel so much worse. And we as humans tend to rank things on tier systems and measurement sticks and all that stuff. And so, you know, it's so easy to feel so much more shame and fear and isolation when it comes to those kind of sins, because they feel like they can't be undone. But one thing I always say is, like, it can't be undone, but it can be erased by his blood, right? So even though you can't go back and change what's happened, it doesn't have to, it's like Jesus removes our track record, both our good track record and our bad track record, right? So, you know, it's like all the righteous things that we can do, like, he becomes our track record when we put our faith in him. It's not about how many good things that we've done. And in the same way, he removes our bad track record and we receive his righteousness. Now, you know, it can be so easy to think, like, okay, well, cool, that's my free pass, and I'm just going to go do whatever feels good. But the reality is when we're truly changed by that, and when we're truly moved by that, we're motivated and just and compelled to continue walking in the freedom that comes with walking in his ways and his design. That doesn't mean that we'll never make a mistake, but when we have and we look back and we think, oh, I just still feel so much shame from that mistake, or I feel so identified by that mistake, you really have to consider, where am I placed in that identity, right? Is it in what I've done or in what he's done? And so knowing that even if it can't be undone, it can be erased. And are you going to believe that and receive it? You know, I don't think God's design for us is to sit there and wallow in our brokenness or our shame. If we put our trust in him, we get to walk forward knowing every day is a new day. There is new mercy. And if it's something that you're currently struggling with, I think sometimes we like to say, well, in the past, I struggled with that, you know, i.e. 5 years ago. But what if it was 5 minutes ago? Because the past can be as simple as 5 hours, 5 days ago, whatever. So one thing I say about that is, if it's something that you're, you know, currently battling, or if you're struggling with like a porn addiction or something like that, you know, I think sometimes we think, well, if I confess that, it needs to be gone cold turkey. And ideally, we'd love for that to be the case and never struggle with it again. But sometimes change doesn't always happen over the course of 2 seconds. Sometimes it's showing up daily, getting in the Word, continuing to pursue the Lord and allow him to continue molding and shaping our hearts. And that change slowly comes over time as he changes our desires. Psalm 37:4 is one of my favorites. It says, seek or delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. And sometimes that's confusing, but what that means is the more that we just show up and diligently pursue the Lord, even if we're struggling with a recurring sin or something, the more that our desires will begin to look like his desires, because we are shaped to look more and more like him. So he won't give us the desires of our hearts that are sinful or selfish. He'll give us the desires of our heart that we begin to have as they look more and more like his. So what that means is our desires will begin to change. So if it's something that you're currently struggling with, don't quit or think, well, I'm just not good enough for God. Know that every morning his mercies are new. That doesn't mean you don't have a part to play. You have a part to play in this holy dance. You know, you have to continue to be persistent and show up and trust that as you do that, he is molding and shaping you and will shift and change your desires over time as you allow your heart to be just go through the fire of it. So don't give up, don't quit, and know that even if it can't be undone, it can be erased. And there's so much hope and there's so much freedom in that.
Through our conversation, Jordan, there's a freedom and an identity. I think that's the theme that it comes out of you. And it's so neat to hear that. You mentioned the book. Is that what your book is about that you're currently writing now?
So I have a book coming out in the beginning of 2019, and It's really on this balance of brokenness and purpose. So I think the concept is really a call to action and an overcoming anthem, whether that's sin or shame or fear or neglect or whatever pain that we've experienced in our life. But I just found, there's so many resources on living your purpose, but sometimes those can be so motivating, but if we're stuck in our brokenness, that's never going to happen. And on the other side, there's so many books on healing and, kind of finding the freedom from shame, but then there's never that, okay, now what? How do I apply this understanding of freedom so that I can continue walking in freedom? Because there's an author, Lisa Revere, and she has a quote that says, "Those out of step with their purpose run the risk of being trapped in their pain." And that is so true. So that pain can take the form of shame. It can take the form of tragedy. It can take the form of heartbreak. It can take all these different forms. But the reality is if we're trapped in that, right, and not standing in our identity, not walking in freedom from that, and not living beyond brokenness, we're never going to walk in our God-given purpose. And so we'll fall right back into the trap of those lies. We'll fall right back into the lies of where our identity is, right? So they have to go hand in hand, and we have to understand the overcoming aspect and the truth aspect, and then actually start building his house and living our purpose, understanding the very tangible ways in which we can do that so that we can continue living in that freedom and in that grace. And our heart and our mind is so zeroed in and focused on that, but the lies of the enemy, the darkness of the culture no longer has the power it once did over us.
Well, Jordan, thank you so much for your time. Jordan Lee Dooley, once again, the website is thesoulscripts.com. And do you have a working title for the book yet, Jordan?
The working title is Purpose.
Purpose. There you go.
I thought that was going to be a title, and no book is titled Purpose. So that's what we're working towards right now. Could always change between now and next year, but that's where we're at. So
I love it. I love it. Well, I tell you what, would you please pray for all of us listening here?
Yeah, absolutely. Lord, thank you so much for every single person that you have listening to this show right now, God. Thank you for covering our imperfect words with your perfect grace. I pray just freedom and identity and power and purpose over this generation, over anyone who's trapped in shame or fear or insecurity. And Lord, I pray over any confusion or insecurity that comes with sexuality, that can come with our identity. I pray that whoever is listening that may feel like their whole identity is in how they identify sexually or in how they identify when it comes to their gender or their any of that, Lord, I pray that we remember our identity is not in those physical things or in our desires, but ultimately it lies in you and who you created and designed us to be. So I just declare that over this generation, Lord. I declare that over every listener. May they walk in that truth and live in that freedom, Lord, and may they just stand in their God-given purpose that you have for them. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Did you know that there are several ways to connect and learn more about God's design for sex, marriage, and the family? You can visit my website at dustindaniels.org and schedule a 30-minute free pastoral coaching session with me, and we'll talk about anything that you want. Maybe you're struggling with pornography yourself. Maybe you found your spouse or your child looking at pornography, and you need guidance on what to do next. Maybe you're a pastor, a priest, or a minister. Maybe you're a small group leader and you just want to start this discussion on healthy sexuality or the pandemic of pornography or how to raise kids in this technological world. You can also order the books, the workbooks, along with accessing the blog and all the podcast archives by visiting dustindaniels.org. Well, Jesus says in Matthew 5:8 that blessed are the pure in heart, for they're going to see God. Walk worthy today, my friend, as you cling to Jesus. I love you, and I look forward to our time again next week.